You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
Let's do it later.
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes.
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy?
Fall Guy.
That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th, hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Hello, welcome to episode 6 of Comedians Talking About Football. I am Sam Michael, and we kick off. Yeah, kick off. Get it? Excuse the pun, but do not pardon the pun. Pardoning the pun, of course, does belong to the boss himself, Bilal Zafar, gaffer of Pez United. If you don't know what I'm talking about, follow comedian Bilal Zafar on Twitter or YouTube. Brilliant stuff. He somehow turned playing Pro Evo 5 into his own live sitcom. With all the classic players, remember them, the default players, Dodo, Ruskin, all that lot. He's given them all personalities and it is just brilliant. Speaking of which, if you don't follow me yet on Twitch, please do. Sam Mike Lol, Michael with OL on the end. Again, see what I did there. I'm hoping to be streaming some live episodes of Comedians Talking About Football on Twitch. So do follow our Twitter page at ComFootyTalkPod for more info on when that's going to go live. Anyway, we're kicking off, as I said, with some very exciting news. This here little podcast is going to be appearing on a football shirt. An actual football shirt. Beijing Spirit, a pro five-a-side team in China International Football League. Yes, pro five-a-side. I'm hoping actually to get the club chairman on, Owen Johnson. He's an old uni friend of mine. I'm so grateful he's doing this for the 2021 season over there in China. Proper exciting. So if you don't have a foreign team, ignore Barca, ignore Real Madrid, get behind Beijing Spirit. More info on the club and the league itself at chinaifl.com. My comedian talking football this episode is Lou Fitz, a Manchester City fan from Moss Side, Manchester. Not to be confused with a previous guest, Dan Fitzhenry, who goes by the nickname Fitz, and who is a Manchester United fan from Devon. I love that both Manchester club fans are called Fitz. I'm currently looking for a third Fitz, actually, who's a Salford City fan. Do get in touch if you know anyone. Again, this episode was recorded during lockdown, so I do apologise for the lack of sound quality. It was all done online. But Lou Fitz is a great lad, proper funny, so the content quality, I'm sure, makes up for it. Here's a bit of Lou in action.
I'm from a place called Moss Side in South Manchester, if anyone's ever heard of it. Oh, describe it in one word. Bang! There we go. Sold to the highest bidder. £5 just for you. You've seen it on Crime Watch. That's where you were seeing it. It's a place where people don't trust the government, but they will buy meat from a van. No questions asked. In Manchester, everyone calls each other our kid. You all right, our kid? Fucking hell, our kid, Lou. You all right, our kid? I never understood why they call it. Towards the end, I figured it out. They're calling each other our kid. It's because when you're walking down the street in Manchester, it fucking might be your kid. You don't know. Don't entirely know. Cities. Do you guys know what a MILF is? Do you guys know? We don't have MILFs in Manchester. We have DILFs. It's a bit different. DILF's a bit different. It's a dad I'd like to find.
Yeah. Right, Lou, how are you doing, mate? You okay?
Very well, thank you. How are you doing?
I'm all right, mate. And that's Lou and not Lewis, that many people might think.
Correct. Yeah, it's Lou. Yeah, Lou. My parents gave me that one. Yep. Cheers for that, mum and dad.
I can relate to that in a way. Everyone says to me, they go, oh, Sam, is that Samuel? And I'm like, no. It's they for some reason decided to call me Sammy.
Like S-A-M-M-Y?
Yeah.
Wow, okay. Were they expecting you to be a girl? And like Samantha or...
I don't think so. I think they just went, yeah, well, I like the name Sam. They all went, right, so it's Samuel. They went, no. Sammy. Be like if you named a kid like, hey, Danny boy or something.
Yeah.
I have no idea why. So they go, hey, Sammy. I go, yeah, that is for my full name.
When you get to be an adult, it'll affect things like getting a mortgage and stuff like that, won't it?
I mean, my wedding, I mean, when we got our wedding video back, it does have me... has the registrar saying to my wife, do you take the Sammy? And there's about five people's faces in the back who'll just go, Sammy? Are you having a laugh?
This vicar's being awkwardly fucking casual about this, isn't
he? Hey, Sammy boy.
Sammy boy. Say yes. Can't do better, mate.
Lou and Sammy. There we go. Thanks for coming on the podcast. Man City, you're a Man City fan and you're a Manchester boy. Which is a big difference from my previous Manchester-based club guest, Dan Fitzhenry, who is a Southwest boy. so I don't have to get you...
Reds are like rats. They get everywhere apart from the place they're from.
So I don't have to get you to justify the reasons for being a fan.
The rest of my family is red. My brother was born in Salford, so he's United. They should actually be called Salford United, but we won't get into the crux of that too much. And then like my grandpa and all that, they're all Man United, but then I decided to be different and go, because we were like Moss Side, so close to City, so that's why I support City.
How old were you then when you first got into football then and then decided to well, take that different route?
Born in 92, it was my birthday the other day in lockdown. Tragic that. Probably about seven, something like that. So my first games were at Main Road. I remember the first game was City against Leeds, 98, I want to say, and we lost 4-0. And I was like, this is me. I like this. I like this feeling of sadness.
Well, that's the thing. If you were saying you were seven when you got into it, right? So and the first game, 98, that means that you literally became like a City fan and started getting into City when Man United were having their treble winning season. So that must have been a difficult childhood.
Most people in Manchester support one or the other. It's not fair to say that most people support City, but when you go to a club and I went to Old Trafford with my brother and my dad and that, and I just didn't feel anything. I don't know, it's a bit spiritual, but you just feel a bit odd. You don't want to sing the songs. It doesn't feel right. Because, you know, Main Road was right there, where we grew up. So why are we getting on the tram and going up to Salford? Why are we doing that when the club's there? So there's no, it doesn't make any sense to me. And it didn't matter. And to be honest, it felt better that they were shite. I don't know if that's just something about me. I'm a glutton for punishment, but it was more interesting when they were shite. It was like, it's great now, like with what's happening. But I remember we were always pushing for that top five. Do you know what I mean? When we were always trying to like get in, maybe we can make you pay for it, like seventh or eighth. It'd be amazing. Because we're never getting relegated, but in the modern age, but we were never like top four. And it was more, I don't know, more games meant more, because now you'll watch City and it'll be like, we're fucking 3-0 up by 20 minutes. It's boring sometimes, but then usual City will fucking mess it up. But I don't know. I miss it. I miss Main Road for sure. Have you ever been?
No, I never went. I never went Main Road.
So like my family are from central Manchester and then we moved out when I was in teenage years. I moved out to Rochdale. So then the closest team was Rochdale. And I remember going there and it was just as expensive as going watching City. It was just as expensive. So 15 quid at the time.
Okay.
Because I had a City card, so you could get in for free. And it was back in like 2003 to 2007 when they just got the Eastlands when it was back then, and they couldn't fill it. So they were throwing seats away. And I remember watching, what was his name, Adam Lafondre. He was at Rochdale and then he went to Reading.
Yeah, that's right, yeah.
I'm trying to think of my quiz. What's the Reading stadium? Don't tell me. Don't tell me. I want to say Ricoh, but that's Coventry, isn't it?
That's Coventry, yeah.
Oh, can I have the first letter, please?
Yeah, it's M.
No, I'm not going to get it.
Medeski Stadium.
Fuck off. That's the one.
That's it. That's the one. So in those early days then, when you were younger, because, I mean, most Man United fans, they'll grow up in various places across the UK, Kent, Brighton, and they've got to deal with kind of rivals at the time who were like Arsenal or Liverpool. But you actually grew up in an era where it was City and Man United. What is like the rivalry really like in places like Moss Side?
Bloods and Crips, isn't it? My brother's a Red. He's 2 years older and he's bigger. He's 6'3" and batters me. But he, on the day of the derby, we don't talk. And I'm not like one of those people that like I'll watch. If we don't win, it doesn't ruin my day, and I don't need to watch them. I can, like, if I was out, you know, like with a girlfriend or whatever, it would be like, if they don't win, no one's getting hit. You know, like no one's day's ruined. But you know, and also I guess when you're in London now, all your comic mates, they're, you know, there's Bristol City, Fulham, all over the shop. But it was nice. I guess England was a good time, you know, where everyone could come together and support the same team. But I just like football. Yeah. So what was it like in Manchester? Most people were Reds. The biggest for them, we were always an afterthought. You know, like it means nothing to play City. But for City, the first fixture I look for is United. When are we playing United? Because I don't care about beating anybody else. As long as we beat United, I'm fine with it. It don't matter. So, but for United, it's not the same, because I guess for so many years, like 13 years, we didn't beat them. So for them, it's an afterthought. It's like, couldn't give a shit. And only now, and all the United fans that I know, like even my brother and all my brother's mates, they're all United. And they stick with them now because they pipe down a little bit because they've been humbled. But it's classic United fans, isn't it? They're just, I guess it's the equivalent to like Arsenal. But up there, you don't get many people supporting Southern teams. In school, you were City or you were United. That's it. And, you know, Liverpool, but they don't last long.
Well, I was going to say, actually, you've already... I know what I do is throughout the podcast, I hit you with some emergency facts that you may or may not know about your own club. And my first one I was going to give you was that throughout the whole of the 90s, Man United beat Man City. Man City never picked up 3 points against Man United. But what I also find quite funny is that for a long time, Man United weren't really too fussed with City, and sometimes they were playing in the league below, and their main rival became Liverpool. And what I like is in the last few years, you've now got Man City, who aren't really looking over their shoulders at Man United, and now they've become the rival to Liverpool, especially in this last season.
Well, it's what's happened at United. It's just so... I said it to my brother once. It was like a couple of years ago when they were finishing like fifth or something. I'm actually embarrassed for you. Like it's you know, it's like when Dad says I'm not upset, I'm disappointed. It's like I'm embarrassed because you also have Manchester on your badge. Like you're also Manchester, and you're getting beat by like fucking Swansea. You know what I mean? Like it's embarrassing, and it's when it's close competition, it's more exciting, isn't it? But like when we were beating them all the time, it's a little bit different now. But they just they fell from grace so much, and they got so bad. I guess we were in the mindset of what they must have felt for like a decade. But it makes a club have more resolve, I suppose. But there's a lot of things about City that I don't like now. But, you know, it's a prime example, like West Ham. Have you been to West Ham's new stadium?
Yeah, I have.
It's horrible. Compared to Upton Park, you were lucky if you came away with points, because that stadium got them, or the bowling ground, whatever. You got, that got them 15 points a season. Easy. Yeah. Just because it's rough. It's not a nice place. And now, you know, their new stadiums, it's in Stratford, it's horrible. And that's what I felt a little bit when we moved to Eastlands, because it didn't, you know, there's It just didn't. I like square grounds. Like my favorite ground in the country is Crystal Palace.
Okay.
A lovely, fucking lovely ground.
Yeah.
And Old Trafford was always intimidating going to. I got bottled outside Old Trafford when I was 30. Yeah.
You got bottled.
Yeah, like if someone, because back then you could drink in the stands.
Right. So oh, of course.
Someone just dashed a bottle into the away end.
It wasn't your brother, was it?
No, he wasn't. He couldn't afford it. Couldn't get in. When you're without silverware for such a long time, you have to get your battles. You have to win your, you know, you have to pick you up. You have to get your pick me up somewhere, I suppose. And that's one of that. I don't even know what the question was. What was the question? I was rambling.
Well, my new question is, I bet that was a good story to go back to school with after getting bottled at a Manchester
Derby. Yeah. But we lost. But yeah, it was nerves, I suppose. I mean, obviously, football violence is always bad. But if you go to a gate, there is an element of, even like with stand-up, for example, there's an element of fear. Fear is sometimes good. It's a good thing. And not like football is, oh, we got to fight, because it's obviously ridiculous. What a pointless thing to do. But there is an element of fear in like going to an away end, and it's not, oh, welcome. It's, you know, it's... There's some, like the last away game, away match was City at Crystal Palace.
Yeah.
Quite a bit of an intimidating, because I lived nearby, but it was like there was something truly unique about football that does that when you're in the away end. Rugby doesn't have away ends, or not international rugby. And then when I was in America for like 7 years and I went to sports events there, everyone's on. You can't fathom. There's something innate about when you walk into the ground and that's the away end. There it is. It's over there. And it's at City now. It doesn't really... They have the away end, but it's not the same as when it was at the old ground.
I know what you mean. I mean, I the last away game I went to was at Bristol City away.
And
it's quite a nice ground there. And I got there and it was quite an atmosphere. And I thought this could be a good away day. But then as I walked through the gates, they had an indie pop band playing.
Really?
On a little stage, and I thought this
was it called Ashton
Gate?
Yeah. It's Millwall's good.
Oh, I bet, yeah.
I've only been there once to Millwall, and that's not fun. But also, I went to Fulham with Parsons and Hugh Davis, I think, and then Fulham people in the stands probably earn more money than the players on the pitch. That's Fulham. And it was a chance like past the hummus wouldn't go amiss there. But again, it's a nice box ground, but you can see the river. But there's something menacing about Main Road. There's something menacing about Upton Park, and something menacing about Old Trafford even, that the new ground doesn't have.
I know what you mean about the bowling ground, because my first ever football game I went to was West Ham. I think it must have been about 93, 94. Mm-hmm. And... it was against Coventry City. Awful game. I think they lost 1-0. But I remember the atmosphere of it. 5 years old and the noise. I've never known anything like it. And I was telling you before we recorded today that my wife's parents, they're from East London. So they're all West Ham supporters. And we went to a West Ham game, I think it was last season or the season before. And obviously it was only the second year of them being in the London Stadium. And it just didn't feel right. Like because he's from East London, he knew some good pubs to go to first. You know, those ones just on the corner with all the doors open. Good place. You can go in there, bit of a sing song, few drinks. Brilliant. Yeah. But then you get on the underground and then you get to that stop. And then you've got about a 20-minute walk to the actual ground.
It is far. It is far, isn't it?
And then it was a bit of a shame, because my father-in-law, he is the sort of guy who wants to stand up throughout the whole game, sing throughout the whole game. And we were up right high up. And, you know, obviously, they all came out. I'm forever blowing bubbles. Everyone stood up. And then everyone just sits down. I mean, there was someone 2 seats in front of me on an iPad. And it's just like, that made him so angry. He's like, this is not what West Ham's about. And I think it takes a while for anyone to settle into it, to a ground, because there was little patches where there were fans like all stood up. It used to be just like one end. You've been to Upton Park. The West Ham fans are so aggressive. And then there were sort of little patches, one over in that corner, one near the front, one behind the goal. And you just think they just need to get them all in one area and it might just work. Yeah. Do you think Man City have had that issue, and have they settled into their ground yet, do you think? Or is it still a little bit...
Well, they made, when they first moved there, it was Eastlands. And then I was in the States, and now it's called the Etihad. I still call it Eastland. Well, they've made it bigger for one. So, but it is when you have the away end. So if you're looking at it from TV cameras just to the right, and that's something that's very annoying about circular stadiums is, oh, you know, you got the Stretford end, you know, you've got this, you've got that, you know, there's certain areas. If it's all circular, it's the family stand or whatever the fuck they call it. But it's basically the two sections to the left and right of the away end are noisy. Mm. So that's where I sit when I go. But the other end is, it's like a graveyard. The family stand, because it's tourism. But that's the reason that the players on the pitch were beating someone 4-0, because we've got so much money now. But so it's swings and roundabouts. But when we first moved there, and it was like we were struggling to get 25,000, and we were like 9th, 10th, it was a bit depressing sometimes. But the noise at Main Road was a lot better, because it's a small stadium, so you can fill it.
These days, everyone can name a Man City player. You know, they've become household names, and they'll always down history. The likes of Aguero, the likes of Silva, you know, everyone, Yaya Toure. From the last five, nearly 10 years, you've got household names playing for City. Who were your kind of cult heroes when you were growing up at Main Road in those late 90s, early 2000s?
Just Sean Gota, obviously. Number one.
Yeah.
Big the goat. I do remember Niall Quinn vaguely. I remember Niall Quinn, Sean Gota, One Chop, and then they sort of, it was 2001 that they moved. Kevin Kilbane, I remember. Schmeichel was my favourite, because in my mind, he left the biggest club in the world to join City, the biggest club in my world. So when Peter moved over, he was probably not, because I was a goalkeeper as well, so he was best goalkeeper in the world. So those are the big ones. But I had a Gota shirt, like everyone did, because he was our only notable player, to be honest.
I'll see if I've got a Sean Gota fact. I have got a Sean Gota fact. So, over 100 goals, a top scorer of four consecutive seasons, and of course he was let go by Man United as a boy.
He's British Commonwealth. I don't know where he's from. He never played for England.
No, he didn't, did he?
I think he might have been from like the Virgin Islands or something like that. He was an absolutely brilliant player.
Who did he leave Man City for?
Sean Gota.
Yeah. Do you know where he went after City in 2003?
Wait, 2003? Didn't he retire?
No. He did. You might think he retired because of where he went to next, but no, he stuck around. He went and played for the next team for two seasons, 43 appearances, 12 goals.
Oh, Reading.
There you go.
He went to Reading, did he?
He went to Reading, mate. That's the thing. He's a hero to us. He would have been, what is he? He's 50 now. So you're looking probably 34, 35.
Fuck it, that's too old.
But he was still playing until 2010.
Wow. Fucking. So
until he was 40, he played for North Village Rams. Who are, I'm just looking into now, they're a Pembroke, Bermudan Football Club based in Pembroke Parish.
I think that's where he's from, Bermuda. Yeah.
You're right. Oh, yeah, hang on. Yeah, look at this fact for another one for you. So he played for Bermuda between 1987 and 2004, 36 appearances, 32 goals.
Feed the goal. And he must have had bad service for, you know, he was a really good player.
Yeah, love Sean Gota.
Yeah, so Sean Gota. But then I saw that, because I was nine then, so my thought, like, I don't know, memories are difficult before nine. I was pissed. No, but I mean, nine. But then when we moved to Eastland for the first year, because they were season tickets were so cheap, that's when I got really into it, because I got a season ticket, and then I was old enough to like get the bus to go on my, you know, like go without my mum and dad. Never went football with my mum, actually, think of it. But yeah, so it was really this era after that I got really into them, I would say. So then the the players that spring to mind then are like Sean Wright Phillips, Stephen Ireland, Richard Dunn. I had a Richard Dunn shirt.
Richard Dunn, yeah, great captain.
Yeah.
He was kind of the last captain before the money came in.
Yeah.
Going back to Schmeichel, because I always find that really funny, the Schmeichel situation, because he left Man United at the end of when they won the treble. And that, yeah. And he, I remember him making a speech at Old Trafford, and it really felt like he's winding down in his career now. You know, he's on the way out, and he's kind of done. He went back to Denmark to kind of, you thought, probably just to have one last year at home, play a bit of football just for the enjoyment of it. And then after all that, he makes a return to the Premier League, and he's at Man City. And I mean, that I think that really upset a lot of Man United fans. I mean, I'll never forget, there's that incident in the tunnel when they swap over. And he puts his hand out to Gary Neville, quite friendly, saying, you know, you're on the wrong side. And Gary Neville just wants nothing to do with him.
Gary Neville's a prick. But I mean, I imagine the City paid him pretty good money. And that's why. And also, I think it was around about that time his son, because his son was in the City youth based off that. So that could have been it as well.
Yeah.
And obviously, everyone knows Kasper now. I think he's probably one of the top three goalkeepers in the Premier League. But and I remember Kasper Schmeichel being at City, and then he went to Bury for a while. I remember watching him at Bury, and he was unstoppable. He was fantastic. But yeah, I always liked the goalkeepers. I always paid attention there. David James, Joe Hart, I think, for so long, he was the best in the league. So then those were probably the big five that I remember, like Richard Dunn, Stephen Ireland, Joe Hart. You said Micah Richards. I loved Micah Richards. Mm. Sort of any player that's from the area that stays or makes it is sort of a cult hero. And then there was a guy that was called Michael Johnson. Anybody remembers him? He didn't play long. He number six, I think he was. Mm-hmm. I thought he was going to play for England. He was silky smooth, but fuck knows what happened to him. I have no idea. I'm going to look him up later.
Let's talk a little bit about the investment that came in kind of around sort of 2009, 2010 time. But before that, you had kind of the last, that team who were kind of Stephen Ireland, Richard Dunn, Joe Hart, when he was younger, was in there as well. Mm-hmm. And at that point, you were finishing around eighth and ninth. It's when, you know, Stuart Pearce was there. And yep. I mean, you can see how different things were, because I think it was something like, I did a thing about it on my YouTube channel. Comedians Talking About Football, you can find it, search it, find it. About how the week that Manchester City won the Premier League with the, you know, they had 100 points and, you know, broken all sort of records. On that week, I think something like 12 years before then, Stuart Pearce was manager, and in a last ditch attempt against Middlesbrough, played David James up front.
Yep. And he almost scored.
Well, you say that. He just flings his leg in the air and nearly kills someone.
he's a genius, Stuart Pearce. We were out of substitutions. He was one of my favourite managers because he scared the fucking shit out of me. And I liked him. I really liked him. Obviously, I don't think he's sort of like, can you imagine him being where Brian Kidd now sits? You know, like I don't know what you call it, the second assistant coach or something, but that's the kind of role that I think Stuart Pearce suits. Imagine him screaming at Sergio Aguero, who's been at City for 11 years and he still can't speak English. I find it absolutely baffling. Did you see the documentary with him? Like the City, it's not really a documentary, it's more just an advertisement for how amazing City are, isn't it? That Amazon thing. But there was a scene when Sergio is in his house and he's like, this is my house. And he's just dead behind the eyes, just dead. Like he seems like a nice guy, but if you hit him with a tree trunk, it just wouldn't affect him. And he's like, when my daughter goes back to Argentina, I just sit here and play FIFA. And then like the camera slowly just goes and just zooms out. Bye, Sergio, and he's just there waving at the camera with his dead eye. Bye. Hola, Dios mío.
But that's the amazing thing that, you know, that here you are now, where really Aguero is used as a substitute these days when things aren't quite going City's way. Whereas, you know, all those years ago, David James was the attacking option in the 80th minute.
Well, he was like 6 foot six. Put him up front, see what happens.
Yeah.
It's a good idea. Yeah, I was all for it. I mean, we still lost, I think. Stuart Pearce did that, and then we had Sun Ji-hai. We had a back line of Ben Thatcher, who's a criminal. Joey Barton, who's a criminal. Chad Evans, who's a criminal. So there you go. There's your middle of the park. That's that. I mean, Joey Barton to me is always like, he's Roy Keane without the pedigree. He's like Roy. If Roy Keane was a gun, Joey Barton would be like a switchblade. Just an absolute, and I liked him. He's a decent player, but he's what a horrific human being. Just what a terrible man. What a toxic player. And he was at City for ages, actually, wasn't he?
Yeah, long old time. Mm. So they were kind of your last days when, like, Keegan was in charge, and then Pearce, and obviously Sven-Göran Eriksson. And then the investment came in. In comes Mark Hughes. In comes Robinho. And what was your initial thought when all that money came in?
Do you remember the City clip of, like, the announcement, and then you have the guys in the back, and they were doing this sort of, you know, the Egyptian pointy left to right dance?
Yeah.
And obviously the owner, the new owner, is from UAE, so it's not even the right country. it was buoyancy and happiness, and it was almost like the checkbook is just gone, and it was like, finally, we're actually going to, because that's what you need, that extra leg up. Doesn't matter how well we played, because City always played well, but at that extra money that you need, and then the next 4 years, we just pissed away money on just Joe. We bought him. He was Robinho, who had the body of a 12-year-old. Fantastic player, but Jesus Christ. And then...
Santa Cruz.
Roque Santa Cruz
from Blackburn. Do you remember? He's one of those players, like, who were around just for like a season. He's like, this guy, and then he actually steps up, and then get rid of him quick.
We had Samaras for so long, and he was our number one attacking option. And then but even still after that, so it's like, you know, like when you give a kid some money and they go into a shop and they're like, oh my God, I don't know if that's what happened with City. They gave him a bit of money and he went, oh shit, Benjani.
Well, I remember I had my housemate at uni at the time. He was a Man City fan. And I just remember the excitement when, because on, I think it was transfer deadline day in the January transfer window. It might have been 2008 or 2009 when Robinho signed. And I just remember them cutting to him and he was just sat there. My memory, sucking on a lollipop or something like that. That could be my sordid mind. And he had two contracts in front of him, Chelsea and City. And we were all sat there going, well, Dan, he's going to go for Chelsea. What do you think? He's like, no, we've had this investment. He's going to go for City. And then he signed for Man City, who again at the time had players like Benjani, Stephen Ireland, Richard Dunn.
He was the
Darius Vassell was your main attack. I think they played him and Darius Vassell.
I remember that.
You know, and then suddenly I remember the first game starts and he scores a free kick. It all seems like it's going to go well. And then there was a struggle for a few years. And you're right, they did just go out and just buy. So it's like, right, Craig Bellamy, Adam Johnson, who's a criminal. And, you know, and all
these.
Oh,
another one, yeah.
Yeah. And, you know, just brought in for a long old time. It was a funny couple of years for Man City.
It was like big players in positions as opposed to the team. And it was... Even like a lot, because there were some that were really good gems, like Ilano was like 10 million or something. Petrov, brilliant on his left foot. And it was, I remember Micah Richards always still being in the team. But like the year before we got Robinho, our highest transfer like fee, I think the couple of years or the year before, like Ben Thatcher for like 2 million. Like just the gulf that quality can get you. And I remember seeing Robinho live and electrifying. Really good player, really good. But I don't know how, I don't really, he just faded out, didn't he? And then even now when you buy big players, they're not all going to hit. but the money has become irrelevant. And back then, I just remember that feeling being, you know, you'd see in the newspapers, oh, City have bought Joe for a record-breaking 20 million. 20 million, we'd spend that on like an academy player now. Mm-hmm. And it's that the difference of that, 20 million, and then the expectation was so high for him, and the guy was dog shit, and then he went to Everton and he was dog shit, and then I don't know where he is now, but he's probably been dog shit somewhere. Money talks, and it was like, finally we can compete against United. That was the big, finally we can get into that top five. We can get, not even like expectations of winning the league, very realistic people. Maybe we can get in top seven. Yeah, yeah, we can play on a Thursday night on Channel 5 against Genk or somebody.
Well, that was it, wasn't it? Mark Hughes obviously under-delivered, as he does. As a manager, and then in comes Roberto Mancini, and then that's when things start to change. You pick up like a League Cup, an FA Cup, and then you start winning Manchester derbies, and then finally come 2012, one of the most exciting last days of the season in any Premier League history. Where were you watching that? What's your memory of that day?
I was in Miami when I was watching that. Yeah, because I started. Well, I left Manchester when I was 18, and I went to uni in the States. I was lucky enough to get a scholarship, so I went to uni in the States, and I stayed there for 7 years. So, I was in America, and I started comedy in Miami in 2013. So, I had just started comedy, I think, or just graduated uni and just started comedy. When I remember watching that at my dad's house in Miami. Before I moved out, and Aguero, I remember that. Even with that, the good thing about being in the States was you could watch like midday. I would watch all the games, stream them. But that's where I was.
Interesting, you said that about Aguero, that infamous moment. You know, I didn't have Sky at the time, so I had to put up with, I think, Paul Merson just having a heart attack. Yeah. On Soccer Saturday when that happened. It might have been Tis, but did you not have, this is a really trivial question, did you not have the American commentators over there? Because I can imagine that would have been horrific. Or was the English commentators?
Yeah.
Aguero!
Yeah.
Golly!
What an that is excellent Manchester point there for the team.
Manchester Blue.
Yeah.
Those Reds will really have a red face now.
Yeah. It was a great day. I think that is a bit of a regret. A lot of regrets in life, but not being in Manchester for just that period, because that would have been so good. That would have been such a good day. But I don't think there's been a league title like that for a long time. So, and Joey Barton fucking up again helped to get that. So, that was probably the best memory that we've got.
That's the thing. I like to think that Barton knew what he was doing that day. As he walked down that tunnel after his red card, he looked back at Mancini and just gave him a little wink and a nod. And Mancini looked back and went, yeah.
Who are you? I think that could have only been topped by when we had the opportunity to beat United at home and win the league in front of them.
Mm.
That would have been lovely. But again, City, things aren't always rosier. We'll find a way to fuck it up. We will.
You obviously would have still been friends with people from school who were you know, Man United fans, and your brother's a Man United fan. What was their reaction when all this started happening, when they started overtaking United? Which is something I think a lot of people could never imagine happening.
30 years of hurt. No, is it 30 years? That's England, isn't it? No, it was. It felt good. But then there's also, it comes with the same... Oh, yeah, but you bought it. You bought the title.
Yeah, that's
like,
it.
Everyone does. So it's the only people that didn't were Leicester.
Yeah, I was going to say.
So that's the only club that hasn't bought it. And even then, they had investment. Everyone's going to... Oh, you bought it. But fuck off, we won it. The only thing now, like, I couldn't... Went in the Carling Cup and the FA Cup, for me, I would be like, just play the kids. I don't want anyone getting injured. It doesn't matter. Champions League. That's all I want. Champions League for City. That's it. Because nothing else. We won everything else apart from that. And that hurts, not winning that. So it'd be good. And if we could beat... Well, I think now we've screwed it up for ourselves a little bit. but with the finance, I don't even know what we did. What we did there? What were we supposed to have done? The financial.
Oh, with the finance. I do you know what? I lose track of stuff like that because it never matters. It never matters. They punish Chelsea and they go, right, well, then you can't sign anyone ever again. You're obviously going to get relegated to the Championship now. And then they go and sign someone. Oh, but no, he's on loan and we're using this method and this method and this method and support. It's bollocks. So let's talk a bit about your comedy then. Do you know, we have met, I think, the once. Do you remember where we met? For the purposes of the tape, he's shaking his head. It was a long way. It was a long time ago.
I'm assuming at a gig.
It was a gig, yeah.
Was I an arsehole?
No, not at all. We met. I mean, this is.
Did we share a moment? Was it lingering? Did we touch lips? Perhaps. What like? What time of night was it?
We both got to the final of a gong show. There was a gong show in a place called Banbury, and it was the Honest Comedy Gong Show in 2016. And I remember it because the guy who I went in the car with won it.
Right.
And I had to hear about it all the way home.
And it was
me, you, in there was like 10 or something did the gong show. Then four of us made it to the final. I don't know if you can call that a final with four of us. And it was me, you, the guy who won it called Ian McDonald and Eric Roy Rushton.
Wow. Shit. Fucking hell. That was a long time ago, wasn't it?
It was a long old time ago. And that's the only time I think we've met. I said, unless we bumped into each other on a various sort of London open mic with 20 other acts doing five.
I think that one would have been, I remember it vaguely, going to Banbury, I remember getting the train and the setup being really weird and there not being many audience.
That's it. I think there were literally seven audience or something like that.
And I just did my set and split, I think, because it was like a 2-hour trip back to London. Mm. It's Oxfordshire, isn't it, Banbury?
That's it, yeah. And the guy who won it, he's a friend of mine, but it was his third attempt at the gong show.
Really?
Yeah. And I think the people who were judges that night were the staff who had become quite friendly with him. So I felt we were mugged off that night. I assume either me, you, or, well, let's be honest, or Eric would have won. But...
But, yeah. It's a good balanced lineup, though. Sorry.
But so you were saying that you started comedy in America, in Miami.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
how was that?
Well, I graduated uni and I started writing when I was in uni, but I wrote for a year before I ever got on stage. Mm. And then I didn't want to come back to the UK. So then for 3 years, I was in Miami gigging. Pretty much every day, 3-4 times a week, and working full time. And then my green card got denied, 2016, and I just couldn't take. The idea was get my green card and then go to New York or LA or Chicago or whatever, but I just couldn't take Miami anymore. I don't like the. It's a soulless place. It's you drive. I don't know if you've ever been to Florida, but it's you have to drive everywhere.
Yeah.
It's too hot. Not, and I'm not a beach. I like old things, a bit of culture, walking, things like that. But it's it didn't have that. So then I couldn't take it anymore. So I moved to London in 2016, and then just so it's almost like resetting the clock, because if you think about it, it's like 2013, 14, 15, it's almost 7 years. But the clock resets for me in 2016 because the comedy is just totally different. It's just points of reference, the way you write, the way you approach it. It's frustrating with lockdown happening because I felt a bit more momentum happening for myself, but you know, it'll be there. You know, when I've heard it on other podcasts and things, the idea of, I guess for everyone, is don't think about things being cancelled, just think about them being postponed. Because I was supposed to debut this year up in Edinburgh, and I had a pretty shit year last year. And then it was, you know, working towards that and sorting out the venue and PR and all that shit that comes actually behind the gigging. And I miss stand up quite a lot. Mm. And I don't particularly enjoy like Instagram and Facebook. It gives me a bit of anxiety, to be honest. But I'm fine, like with the booze review and things like that. It's just something to do to keep your head in a comedy way of thinking, or even talking to a comic, even talking to someone about stand-up, it's someone that loves it, you know, having that rapport. It's you have to, we all got to find a way to just keep ticking it over, because it's a muscle, isn't it? It'll go if you don't. So that's that was a long, convoluted answer to a question that you didn't ask.
No, but I think you're absolutely right. And I think a lot of people, in many cases, we're all in lockdown. We have no one to talk to about comedy and stand-up, whereas normally you might, like you live with guys who do stand-up, you can talk about it quite a lot. You feel like you're out the loop, that you're falling behind and everyone else is progressing, but that's not the case. You know, everyone's in the same boat. There are you know, TV comics, they might get their face on the one show, but they're struggling as well, you know, and you can just tell some of them are going absolutely insane. I mean, I'm not quite to the point where Richard Herring is playing himself on snooker every night on Twitch. Fantastic content, but you can tell 53-year-old man is having a breakdown. Still, yeah, you're right. It is difficult, and some people have just taken like a duck to water to things like TikTok and whatever. Twitter. I thought I'd give TikTok a go. I downloaded it, and the logo gave me a migraine.
It's dancing.
It's mad. Well, I downloaded the logo, and it was like a white thing with a bit of green and a bit of red. I looked at it and thought, I can't deal with this. I clicked on it, and there was someone dancing. I went, no, I deleted it straight away. It just confused me. It made me feel lost and cold and lonely.
I like gigging. I like live stuff. I don't. I've written bits and stuff for TV and radio and sketches and things like that. And it's just different. It's a different way of thinking. It's a different way of training your brain. But of course, when you're a stand-up, you have to be multifaceted. You have to be able to do, it's not all just live. But also when you're doing, you know, writing the Edinburgh show, it's an hour. So it's not all ding, 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 ding. There has to be a bit of nuance to it. And I don't know about anyone else, but I often find that I'm most creative after a gig.
Right.
On the way home, or after the sit off, or whatever it is, when I get home and I can't sleep, it's then. And to not be able to flex that muscle and use it, I've said muscle twice. I've said muscle twice, Sam. Three times. That muscle, muscles. I've been doing press ups, muscles.
Well, we can't play competitive football, but we can play competitive quizzes against your fellow comics and football
Excellent
supporters.
Excellent segue. Yeah.
So you claim, Mr. Lufitz, that you are a Manchester City fan. You're from Moss Side. And what I love about this is that the guy who was a Man United fan on my podcast goes by the nickname Fitz. So I love that this is not only a Manchester derby, but a Fitz derby. So all you've got to do to beat him is get three of these questions right in a row. Four of these questions right in a row. He got three. You can draw with him on three. If you get four, you've beaten the Man United fan who lives near Devon. So let's...
You can give me the Be No United quiz. I might get that.
Right, okay, here we go. So, today's questions are from thebeano.com. The first question, what country is Super Saver Edison from? Is it Japan, Argentina, Brazil, or China?
Brazil.
Do I like that?
Correct. Who did Mahrez win the league with before he joined Manchester City? Manchester United, Liverpool, Spurs, Leicester or Arsenal, or Colchester United?
Leicester.
Do I like that?
Correct. Which Man City scorer shares a name with British currency? These are the sort of questions you want. Johnny Raheem Coppers, Sterling. Norman Pound, Emilio Fittipaldi, or Raheem Sterling?
Raheem Sterling.
Do I like that?
Johnny Coppers.
Amazing.
How did he only get three of these?
I have no idea. Here we go. Right, back to that season from before, from 2012. Who knocks City out of the FA Cup in the third round in the 2011-2012 season? Is it Liverpool, Chelsea, Arsenal or Manchester United? So the same league that you first won the Premier League. Who knocked you out of the FA Cup in the third round?
Fuck. Arsenal.
Steady, David, don't! Get round! No, don't! Bloody!
Fortunately, no, it was Man United. So that is three questions, please? 3-3. Yeah. It's another draw in the Man Derby, Manchester Derby, and Fitz
Man
Derby.
Man
Derby. Well, don't worry, because you didn't beat the Man United fan. You didn't beat your fellow Fitz. But you have won today's prize. We were talking a bit before about the kind of the final days before it all kicked off and the money started paying off. Excuse the pun. At Manchester City.
Signed Aguero shirt.
it's nearly as exciting as that, but instead it's the 2011 away shirt from that season.
Fuck off.
And yeah, this is on its way to you. I'll
That's amazing. Gosh.
I love those colours. I thought I'll go with that one. I always think people don't always have the away shirt. So yeah, that's I'll send that on its way to you.
That's so nice of you. Thank you.
And I'll get
I had that when I was younger. Oh,
did you?
Brilliant. Yeah, I did, yeah. I mean, I had them all. I had that horrible purple one as well.
Oh, I remember.
I remember having that one.
That's right. What I'll do is I'll get your address, obviously, when we're not recording a podcast, because I don't want you to get a load of abuse from Liverpool fans or Man United fans or people from Miami who are just sick of you slagging off their city.
Exactly.
I do say there's something wonderful about a guy from Moss Side saying, oh, I can't be doing Miami.
Yeah, the irony doesn't. Yeah, I know. Yeah, it comes out. Yeah, it's too fucking sunny here, mate. It's too sunny.
What I normally do at this point is I'll say to you, you know, tell the listeners where we can find you, where you're gigging, about the Edinburgh show. And obviously, sadly, that's not the case at the moment. But in the meantime, you're doing the booze review at the moment. Where can people find that?
Yeah, I'm doing it in, well, the Instagrams, the YouTubes, the Facebooks. It's on those things. The idea is I'm just going to do one a week to just keep me ticking over. And it's not all just booze. And I don't really drink them, but it's not all just booze. And it's just, I don't know, little joke lockdown jokes within. And then still prepping the old Edinburgh show. And that will debut 2021, 8 o'clock. I'm gonna plug a show that's over a year away. 8 o'clock at the Underbelly. There you go.
Nice one. And what's the show called?
It's called Babs.
Babs, love it. And yeah, do find on the Instagram, as you were mentioning, it's lou.fitz, and that's FITZ. So they can find you there, and if we search you on Facebook and Twitter, we'll be able to find you there as well.
Yep, that Lou Fitz is Twitter, and then just Lou Fitz on the old Facebooks.
Nice one, mate. Well, hopefully I see you out there again soon when comedy's back. Yeah. We can get to another final of a gong show in Oxfordshire or something.
Yeah. Excellent. Hopefully there'll be more people there, but I doubt it after all.
Well, nice one. Honestly, it's been really good good having a chat with you. Nice one, Lou. Take care, mate. Speak to you soon.
Speak soon, mate. Ta-ra.
Cheers. Thanks again to Lou Fitz. You've got to love a lad from Moss Side Manchester slagging off Miami, haven't you? Brilliant. I love the idea of Lou walking across Miami Beach in 40-degree heat like, nah, mate, fucking shite this. Give us fucking Arndale Centre or Coronation Street any day. I don't know any place in Manchester. Not a clue. But thank you, Lou Fitz. It was great to catch up with him. Hope to gig with him again soon. And hopefully I'll be more memorable next time. That was a bit awkward, wasn't it? No, it was great speaking to him. Thank you so much. As I say, he's proper funny, and you can find his stuff online. And if you are going to go to Edinburgh next year, then do go and see him. Fantastic live act. He should have won that gong show, actually. I'll give him that. He should have won that gong show. My next guest on Comedians Talk About Football is Jack Topher, reliving that 2015-16 season as he's talking about Leicester City. In the meantime, do get in touch. You can email comedianstalkingaboutfootball@gmail.com or follow us on Twitter and Instagram with the handle @comfootytalkpod. Follow me on Twitter if you want, @SamMikeLol. Or find us on Facebook. Just search Comedians Talking About Football. Until then, take care, lads and lasses. Take care.
Sports Social Podcast Network.